And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and it's Thursday.
You accused me of having foil on my TV antennas. I'm smarting from that one.
Well, I didn't know how they did things in the sticks in Missouri. Just kidding, if you're from Missouri, totally. Linda Gassenheimer's here, of course. Today we're going to learn about recipes from many of the world's destinations. Our guest is well-known here at WLRN in our downtown studios. Right, Linda?
Absolutely, Radio Reading Service. She's been, done a great job for many, many years here.
Many, many years, yes. We've been seeing right. her. And I'll let you introduce her.
Okay, her. Well, in addition to her, don't we all love to be with our guests and not be in the kitchen cooking when they're there? Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Well, our guest is, she's going to give us some tips. She's had an amazing life. In addition to being on the Radio Reading Service here, she's traveled the world for business and for pleasure. And along the way, she picked up recipes and learned how to fit them into her active life and entertained all the time. She's going to help us. And she's Betty King. Her book is Seasons to Taste, Menus and Memories from Home and Abroad. So let's welcome Betty King.
Thank you very much, Linda.
It's great to have you with us.
Delighted to be here.
Well, and she's brought us food, so we're even happier, right, Joe?
Yes. It's like having Julia Child here.
Here we go. Yeah. Okay, and we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, as well. Join us. Do you have any entertaining questions or maybe you have some tips for our guest? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or radio at WLRN.org is our email.
Okay, if you want to join us. And, of course, with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column in the Herald. You can also read his wine column. It's in the Saturday Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Fred, are we there?
Are we there?
Uh-oh, technical difficulties.
Again, with Fred. Where's Fred? Okay,
okay, we'll try him again.
We'll try him again. let's go to Betty King because her book is just so fascinating. It's Seasons to Taste. It's an amazing look at your travels and the food and the people connected with them. So, Betty, you learn to entertain with ease. Help us out. Give us some tips on how can we have people in and relax and enjoy them.
Well, of course, living in the tropics where it's so warm, we can often serve an entirely cold menu. So that's easy peasy. I mean, you just take it out of the fridge and slap it on the table. But if you want to cook something, I mean, for example, I have brought a salade niçoise today made with salmon instead of tuna. And
well, let's tell everyone what a salade niçoise is.
A salade niçoise is usually tuna, but in this case salmon, with vegetables and olives and lettuce and tomato, and it's a composed salad that's built around a fish dish. And what I am pretending is that a day or two ago I had a dinner party and I served potatoes and green beans and salmon.
So this is your second, what you call this, second act, after you have leftovers. But you planned for leftovers.
I planned for leftovers. I planned by ordering half again, or buying half again as much food as I needed for the party a couple of nights ago. And then when it was cooked, I took it and put it aside so that if everybody was hungry, they weren't going to eat up my second act.
So the thing
luckily
to do...
lucky for us.
The thing to do is to know Betty the next day after she's had people over. But also, so Betty King, now you made a salmon, you made green beans, you made potatoes, and you did all of this, and you said you didn't cook when the people are there. So how did you serve a warm meal like that?
Well, I counted back. I mean, if I was inviting people for 7 and maybe they didn't all come on time, we probably were going to sit down to eat at 8 o'clock. So the baking potatoes go into the oven, preheated to 400 degrees an hour at the time just before the first people should be arriving.
So so people are going to arrive at 8.
No, people are coming at 7, and I put them in at 7. I'm going to serve them dinner at 8.
Okay. So presuming that people come at 8 by
yeah,
then.
Yeah, but you know, baking potatoes are very forgiving. They can go for another 15 minutes, half an hour without, you know,
right.
dying.
Okay.
And then about 15 minutes before I'm going to serve, I go into the kitchen, I put the salmon, which I have put in a baking dish, a whole side of salmon, and I've folded the thin part underneath so that it's...
Let's stop for half a minute there, because I get questions, and myself have the problem. You have a large piece of salmon, so you've got a thick part and you've got a thin part, and the thin part's going to get overcooked and the thick part's not going to be cooked. But what she's doing is she folds that thin part under, so it's all, the salmon's
okay.
all one.
Oh.
Yes. But before we go on, I think we've got Fred with us. Hello, Fred. Are you with us? Fred? I think he's...
Is Fred in a cast?
Yes, he's having trouble.
Maybe that's it.
Fred, are you with us?
Fred. Okay.
Okay, we'll keep trying. We'll maybe put him on the phone instead. Anyway, poor Fred. As many of you may have remembered, last week we mentioned that Fred slipped on the ice and broke his leg, and it's hard for him to get near the computer with this huge cast that he has
on. In Michigan.
And he's in Michigan. Yes. Anyway, let's go back to she's talking about summer food here, and we've got our salmon, and she's cooking it so that she doesn't have to be in the kitchen. So we've got our baked potatoes and our salmon, and how do you cook your green beans in ahead then?
Well, I've blanched my green beans ahead, and while the salmon is cooking, and it's 10 minutes per inch, so you measure how thick your salmon fillet is, because they're not all the same size, and then you... 10 minutes an inch, and if it's an inch and a half, that's 15 minutes, etc. So while that's happening, I get out my blanched green beans. I put them in a
pan. How do you blanch them?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
you blanch them, but you cook them. It depends upon how thick they are. You cook them until they're just crisp tender. They're not no longer raw.
In salt water.
In very heavily salted water.
Okay.
And until they're bright green and they're no longer, you know, completely, but they're not completely cooked. And you take them and you put them in a fry pan with either oil or butter, little salt and pepper, and you reheat them that way.
Another tip might be, because you're talking about them being really green, I mean, you could do this actually a day ahead, and when they're after they're blanched, put them in a bowl of ice water.
Oh, yes, to stop the cooking.
And stops the cooking. Mm-hmm. And then you can, the next day when you're ready, just toss them in a... I use a big wok because it takes a lot of beans.
Right. Yeah, and then you just reheat, in effect, reheat them and cook them slightly. And and that's, you know, there's your meal. And you've only been in the kitchen for 10 or 15 minutes. And then you summon everybody and pour the wine, and off you go.
And then you have your second axe. And all through the book, I think it's so fascinating, is that you don't like to lose waste food, so you have it already. You have second acts, what you call, what you can do with the food.
Well, and also you know, cooking ahead. Cooking once in order to eat twice is a good way to go. So you don't have to always be. So today, I have brought you the green beans and potatoes and salmon, and I added to that some cherry tomatoes and some olives that are stuffed with anchovies, and some they would be served with lettuce,
and it was delicious, and
very colorful.
Started it a long time ago, so I've finished mine now.
But what's so nice is the way she's cooked the salmon. It's not overcooked. It's just nice and soft, and we've now, I think we've got Fred. Fred, have we got you?
Got me. Hi, how is everybody?
Well, how are you, Fred?
Good,
Tesker?
Friend.
We don't have to call 911.
Fred, are you there?
I'm there, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
How's your leg, Fred?
Getting better. I'm going to be dancing in a minute.
Okay, well, how about telling us what we're going to drink before we dance?
Well, Betty's talking about traveling the world of food, so I thought I would talk about traveling the world of wine to go with that food.
All right. That sounds wonderful. Let's go back to Betty for a minute here and talk about, in your book, you have side notes as to what you can do about food. And one of them I really loved was you're talking about your grilled soy chicken. And you said you prefer to pre-cook the chicken before you grill it. So why would you do that? You're cooking it twice.
Because the grilling gives you that burn, you know, the grill burn. But if you start from scratch, particularly with white meat of chicken, you end up with something that is incredibly dry. So,
in other words, to get it all the way cooked through.
It's essentially cooked through before you put it on. You are reheating it on the grill and getting the grill marks and the smoke flavor, but without drying it out, and it's still lovely and moist in the end.
So you could cook it a day ahead or the morning of?
Absolutely.
And then just a quick warm on the grill, mm-hmm. and you're good to go. And she's got a lovely sauce with it, so that makes life a lot easier.
What is in the sauce?
Is it the Indonesian sauce?
The soy.
Peanuts. Peanuts and soy. Peanut butter, soy sauce, ginger, honey, vinegar.
And she's remembering that off the top of her head. Sounds really wonderful. But on that note, we're going to take a short break. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest is Betty King. She's the author of Seasons to Taste Cookbook. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. And we've been talking about easy entertaining, and author Betty King's been giving us some wonderful tips on how we can cook things in advance and even have them as a second act and use them in another recipe the next day. Her book is Seasons to Taste Cookbook. And we're going to talk more in a few minutes, but this is Dinner in Minutes time, and this weekend starts Chinese New Year's. So with Chinese food in mind.
I thought you were going to say starts almost the Super Bowl.
Well, we're going to talk about that next week.
Okay.
But it's Chinese food today. This is a quick and easy Chinese dinner. It's Chinese pork puffs with stir-fried rice. And the puffs are really just large iceberg lettuce leaves. And I use them to wrap the stir-fried pork in. And it's really, really a simple recipe. Joe's looking at me. He always looks at me kind of, I don't know how simple it's going to be. Right, Joe?
Well, I don't know how you're going to get the lettuce to hold together enough to keep the
iceberg.
It's iceberg. Yeah, thank you very much, Betty King.
But that's crisp.
It's crisp. And what you're going to do is you stir fry the pork and you buy the stir fry sauce. So it's really simple and easy. You put little pieces of the pork into the lettuce.
Like teriyaki or something.
Or even, it's called stir fry sauce. You don't even have to think about it. And then in that leaf, I also put some slivers of scallions and some hoisin sauce. And it's warm, and it just rolls right up.
Plum, correct.
It's hoisin sauce. It's not plum sauce. That's another sauce. Oh. But it's okay. But you know what? Plum sauce would be very good in it. Yeah. You could really have that. So that's so easy. And now the rice, a stir-fried rice, I make it even simpler because, first of all, I microwave the rice. Then I take the rice and... Once the pork's out of the wok or your skillet, I put the rice in and it gets what we call wok flavor or rice flavor. And the marinade I have, the stir-fried sauce, which is marinating the pork, I cook that with the rice so it gets cooked and gets another extra flavor. And so add a little some frozen peas and you've got a simple Chinese meal. And you can see that whole recipe and a photo. It's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. All right, Fred Tasker, you can take us around the world and drink?
Absolutely. You know, I see Betty spent her business life traveling the world and encountering the foods of many nations, so I thought I would pair wines with those nations' foods.
Great.
So here's a list of countries and their best-known wines, what I call their signature wines. First, New Zealand. When I mention that country, wine fans instantly say Sauvignon Blanc. Decades ago, the world's winemakers debated Sauvignon Blanc's proper style. Should it be lean and funky, or should it be sweet and rich like Chardonnay? And then New Zealand came along and took over the debate with Sauvignon Blancs that are lively and crisp, with intense flavors of white grapefruit and what tasters came to call gooseberries. These wines are great for cutting through creamy casseroles and sauces and that sort of thing.
And that's interesting because I was asking Betty King earlier what were some good things to make in advance. She says, well, you can always make a casserole in advance. So when we make the casserole, we'll have your Sauvignon Blanc, right?
Yeah, and you can also buy the wine in advance.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Hey, okay, Argentina is next. They had stifling dictatorships there decades ago, and during that time they turned out dull and heavy red wines that sold only at home. But then once the dictatorships were gone and they were free, and they had the help of outside money and expertise, Argentina burst forth with Malbecs that taste just like those Rock's chocolate-covered cherry candies in liquid form. This is a very extremely user-friendly wine.
Oh, yes, and it's wonderful with the Argentine steak, something like
absolutely,
that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, wow. So now we're all hungry because we've had steak and wine and chocolates and cherries, huh?
Boy, everybody's happy now.
Yeah.
Anyway, everybody knows about France. For eons, they've been the home of Bordeaux, which is the ethereal blend of Cabernet Sauvignon and other grapes that are arguably the best in the world. And they have Burgundy wines, which are the equally ethereal red Pinot Noir wine that can make the equal statement. In Spain, they make many wines, but when you mention the name, wine fans instantly think of Rioja, which is the light, lively red wine from the Tempranillo grape, and this is perfect with Spanish paella. Italy. The American GIs returned from World War II in Italy with fond memories of friendly red wines in straw-covered flasks and perhaps the Signorita Bella with whom they shared it.
And I understand you spent a lot of time in Italy drinking some of this wine, Fred Tasker.
Yes,
as
I
a
did.
Student. Yes.
Stuff.
Brings back
I
memories, huh?
I couldn't always support the Chianti. Sometimes I had to get the cheaper wines that came out of 50-gallon jugs.
Okay, in a basket.
Anyway, this is perfect for pizza. Okay, then you come to California. It's riper, richer, bigger Cabernet Sauvignons rightly lay claim to equal status with France's red superstar wines. And California Cab is the quintessential wine for the grilled New York strip steak.
We're back to steak again. Joe, this is your happy day.
Yes.
Back to steak. Yeah, Joe, you doing okay
yes,
out there?
Yes.
he's dreaming.
Yeah.
More than a century ago, Aussies took a 30 Syrah grape from France's Rhone Valley, planted it in its warmer down-under climate, and now make a sweet, rich, ripe red wine they call Shiraz. This is a great sort of humble Tuesday night meatloaf wine.
Sounds good to me. Meatloaf and wine.
Finally, we come to Florida. For years, wine fans have said that a good California Gewürztraminer white wine tastes like the tropical fruit called lychees. And now Schnebley's Winery south of Miami makes a lychee wine that tastes exactly like Gewürztraminer. So there is order in the universe.
Okay. Well, thank you for that tour, the wine tour of the world. Making us all hungry and thirsty. Let's go back to Betty King and her book. And Betty King, you said one of the reasons you decided to write the book was to put down recipes and stories for your family and friends that otherwise might be lost.
And everybody should do that. Everybody should. Everybody who has memories of their grandmother's or their mother's kitchen or table should preserve those things, because the grandchildren are going to come along and say, you know, grandmother used to make that dish, and where is the recipe?
You are so...
Nobody's written it down.
You are so right, Betty. You know, I kick myself all the time for not having done just that with my mother and grandmother.
Exactly.
You know, I've been doing that with my family, and the problem you run into is that you have a really nifty recipe, but was it invented by your grandmother or your mother-in-law or your aunt? And sometimes they start arguing about who came up with it.
Well, now, give us some tips, because it's easier said than done. You've got these recipes that are on little note cards or scribbled somewhere, and most of the time there's no measurements. So what do you do?
That is the greatest challenge of all, is the measurements, because when you're used to making something and you've made it over and over and over again, you know, it's a little different each time, a little more salt, a little less soy, a little, you know, so you really have to discipline yourself and do it several times until you get it really right with the measurements. I always put salt and pepper to taste because, you know, some people are on salt-free diets and so forth, but everything else you really need when you're writing down a recipe, you really need to have a measurement, and it's a real challenge.
Well, and what you're saying is that really you should sort of cook some of these recipes and write them down as you cook. In fact, in today's world, you can you can talk into your smartphone or into something else as you're cooking,
exactly.
And have it come out in written words. I mean, you can. I do it in my Evernotes. I speak into it and it types it out, and I don't have to retype it even.
Separate two eggs. One, two.
Linda, have you left your recipes for your children and grandchildren?
In a way, I have, because
they're published.
They're all published in over 30 cookbooks.
I guess we're all lucky for that.
Well, they have to buy the cookbooks, huh?
Well, they need to support the family. You know that, Fred Tesker. that's a wonderful idea, is to put down everything as you go along, as you're making the recipes for holidays and things like that, is try to record them. And Betty King, this is really a wonderful book. It's a fascinating read about... I love reading it. We didn't even get to all the fascinating people you met along the way.
Well, the editor who worked with me on the cookbook said that I needed to write stories, and so I just ran amok. I just, you know.
Right. Yeah, well, and it's wonderful to read all about them. It's been really a very tasty and interesting week. Betty King, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a great pleasure.
And thank you for the delicious food.
The food is wonderful.
You're very welcome.
Her book is Seasons to Taste Cookbook, Menus and Memories from Home and Abroad. Fascinating read. Bonnie Berman and Joe Cooper, great to be with you.
Indeed, thank you.
Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Well, next week we'll be talking with chef restaurateur extraordinaire Michael Schwartz. He's going to help us plan our Super Bowl celebrations. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for tuning in this hour. Engineer in charge is social media coordinator Jason Zepka. Our lead producer is Richard Ives. Polly Landis is associate producer. No programs on cutting your ties to public radio, thank you. Perhaps you'd like to hear the whole program or even link it to a friend. It's easy at our website, WLRN.org. And also have the Topical Currents Facebook page as well as the iTunes podcast. Bonnie and I return Monday with a program which highlights some of our local impact environmental questions with Matthew Schwartz, the Executive Director of the South Florida Wildlands Association. And, of course, we'll be taking calls during that program. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.